Hi there, this is Dennis Velko with Out Bureau Voices. Thank you so much for tuning in to yet another lively and interesting conversation with LGBTQ entrepreneurs, professionals, and community leaders from around the world. Today, we are pleased to have Dr. Bryson Scholar Lee joining us from St. Louis, Missouri. Thank you so much for joining us, Bryson.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. We had a really great initial conversation. You have recently joined the Out Bureau group on LinkedIn. So for everyone in the audience, both watching or listening across the 14 different podcasting apps, give us a little bit of information about you, and then we'll kind of spawn off from there.
Okay, awesome. Well, as you stated, my name is Dr. Bryson Scholar Lee Downing, and I am a 33-year-old man of trans experience. I am currently a PhD candidate at Walden University, pursuing human and social services. I'll be getting my, I also obtained a master's in philosophy, a master's in management and organizational leadership, a bachelor of science in psychology, and justice and law administration. I get them mixed up, right? And bachelor of arts in psychology.
Holy go moly, just wait right there. So you have two bachelors,
yes,
two masters,
yes,
and now a PhD candidate.
Holy yes,
moly, have you ever not been in school?
Yeah, well,
I mean, you don't look 80 years old.
But but the roots of my hair probably do. No, yeah, no. I actually pursued school. I got my bachelor's in 2010, and then I took a break, and I went and pursued my master's in 2016 and graduated in 2018. And here I am in my doctorate program. I'll be graduating May 2021.
Okay. And is there a particular focus in your doctorate program?
It's a general focus, but I am doing my dissertation on the experiences of parents of transgender children. So I will be doing my dissertation on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wonderful. Certainly there's not enough information and enough resources. So you have a psychology degree, I heard. What's your other?
Justice and law.
So psychology and justice and law. Well, right there, that would be a fascinating career,
yeah,
right? I mean, you know, going into law and psychology, just so many things all the way up to, you know, working at the FBI or CIA or something like that. So I could see a really, you know, tight connection between those two. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've watched CSI or anything like that, you kind of get that. And yeah. Then your two masters are again in
philosophy and management and organizational leadership.
Okay, so organizational leadership, I could definitely see how that fits with the other two, and philosophy. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting one to kind of toss in the mix. Why that?
So when you're in your doctorate program, you're basically getting a doctorate in research. So they like to categorize it as philosophy. So my degree will read a master's in philosophy, and it also say human and social services. So it's just to state that I have a certain level of research accumulated under my education background.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So when taking all these courses and looking at this degree path, was that something that you kind of set out to, that, you know, that you knew? Some people, you know, they'll go into a college, you know, like I have a nephew right now in college. He knows exactly what he wants to do. He's been on this path for a long time. And so he has a clear path literally to his doctorates, schools he's wanting to go to, and et cetera. Was that for you? Was that your path, or was it, you know, more of a kind of opportunistic and kind of learning as you go, which is totally cool as well? I think that's actually very valuable.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. I'm always like to share my experience with education. I was always raised in, I come from a highly educated background, a familial background. But
you mean your parents?
Yeah, my parents, my grandparents, aunts, you know, so, we're, very highly educated. And, but my journey, my educational journey was always trying because I was diagnosed with a learning disability when I was in middle school. And I always had a challenge of, just learning and comprehending information. So it always took me a lot to memorize things and, stuff of that nature. I wasn't a great tester because my SATs, I used to play basketball and I would get all these, recruitment letters. And then I would have to take the SAT and my SAT scores were terrible. I wasn't a great big tester. So my college coach gave me an opportunity to complete a summer program to get into undergrad. And I was great at that. I was always a great student, but a test taker, I just was not. And then I finally, I graduated with my psychology degree and my BS degree. And my BS degree, I'm sorry.
No worries.
So I had hopes on going to get my master's, but my GPA wasn't of what they required. You know, you read the requirements like 3.5 and all this stuff. And I had a 2.05 in undergrad. So yeah, I graduated with a 2.05 and I just wasn't empowered to pursue because I would read the requirements and I audibly would tell myself no. And as time grew on or moved forward, my mother had decided she wanted to go to school and got her bachelor's. That empowered me to get my master's because I always had a concept or a theory that, your parents create your blueprint and you see what is kind of predestined for you or laid out for you, I should say. But then you always do more than that. So my mother had at the time.
I wouldn't say predestined, but I would certainly say as role models or as potentiality, I think there's certainly validity and, if you come from a family who has had a predominantly college, people who've gone to college, then you're more likely to do that. But you also have breaks. Like I was the first one in my family to go to college. And my parents did not do that, didn't have that opportunity, wasn't part of their background. And I'm the youngest of three kids and both of my sisters went into more, practical, learn on the job and or short-term vocational style training. And there's so many different experiences out there. I like to say it certainly though helps set you on it. For example, my where I mentioned my nephew's in college, he's going for a doctorate, but a doctor as well in sports medicine. And he was not the valedictorian, but the one right under it. And it was a fraction of a fraction of a point. Well, that's because, in my family, my parents really didn't push education and basically we existed. You're there. It was, I could do chats about that, but this isn't me in therapy. But my sister, Buddha, Thor, and God love her. She really pushed my nephew on education. Not like insanely. He did have a life. He was involved in sports. That's why he's going into sports medicine. He's blending two of his loves. But he's a voracious reader. And if it weren't for my sister setting the school as a priority, even though it wasn't her past, he wouldn't be where he is today. But still, as a young person, he still has his own choices to make. And so anywho, I just wanted to kind of like flesh that out a little bit, you know, your statement. I agree with it, but there's, I personally don't feel that anyone is predestined to anything, because you can always, you know, rise above and have a different life than from which you came. So
no, absolutely. And I stand corrected. I was a wrong choice of words.
I thought it was to me, that's what I love about these conversations is, yeah, you know, it really is an opportunity for us to, you know, to chat. That's also sometimes things happen in my view of the world, things happen for a reason. And I think it's important for people to hear those different messages. So yeah, no reason to apologize. It's just a conversation.
yeah. No. It was just a wrong choice of words that I used. But basically what I'm saying is that, you know, there is a blueprint, you know, and I truly believe that when your parents achieve a certain level, you know, it lays down a foundation. There's a foundation that you stand on, but necessarily don't have to follow that path. You know, it's a layout. It's like right, a geographical map. You know, you see how to get to different places, but you take your own route.
Right.
So yeah, I totally agree. I mean,
and I think that creates it helps set some opportunities. I mean, obviously, if a parent, no matter what their economic status is, just like my sister, if the parent sets a precedence that education is important, then generally the expectation is that you're not going to be spending 4 hours a day playing video games. You're going to be spending 3 hours studying your work and 1 hour of playing video games. You know what I mean? Yeah. And if the parents, because I'm also a parent, you know, so I can understand this, and I do have to hand it to my ex, he is also a prolific reader, although mostly fictional, and which is okay, but you know, so he's a very good parent when it comes to that. He's all into the school. He's kind of like my sister is, mm-hmm, when it comes to that kind of stuff. Nice. So anywho, and I'm more I do my thing, and I'm treading ground where no family member has ever gone before. I kept hearing, like, you know, the Star Trek music, like Dennis is going where no family member has gone before. So at any rate, so where, you know, what is your goal? You're a PhD candidate. Now, how much longer do you have in that before you achieve that?
So I actually have two more courses left after this module, which will be done in November. Mm. And I'll be starting my dissertation in February. So, and I'm actually I actually started kind of my dissertation a little bit as far as my participants, you know, looking for people to participate in my study, just joining support groups and seeing if people will be interested. So that way I already have my subjects in line when it's ready to do my study.
Gotcha. Have you reached out to Cher?
Not yet. She didn't answer my call. You know?
Oh, dang it. Prima donna. She's probably busy. That, or, you know, Buddha lover, her hearing aid at her ear. Yeah. Probably didn't hear the phone. All that loud music which she's around. But I mean, obviously, you know, I'm sure you're tuned in to different organizations to reach out to try to, you know, get parents, you know, PFLAG.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How have you been with that statement, how have you been finding your dissertation participants, and what else do you need?
Yeah, so I'm part of the WPAHTH, I'm sorry, that's the World Professional Association of Transgender Health Organization. So I'm a member of that organization. And I just got affiliated with a PFLAG organization out here in St. Louis. So it's minute, it's small. So we'll see where that goes. But for right now, majority has been just joining support groups on Facebook, actually, just networking with the parents and those support groups.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I definitely recommend reaching out to the national PFLAG, and perhaps that they would be open to putting an announcement in one of their email blasts.
Okay.
That would, you know, make parents aware. Very cool. So talk to me a little bit about the goals of your dissertation.
Well, my goals, you know, my overall goals always are intertwined with things that I do, which is to educate, elevate, empower, and help people evolve. So the goal of my dissertation is just to do that, is to bring a different lens, you know, being a man of trans experience and being part of the transgender community, I feel there's not a lot of services for parents of transgender children. Mm. And there's barely services for us. I mean, you know,
right.
We're fighting for healthcare. Okay. So, but yeah, so my purpose is to bring a different lens, to see the view of the parent of a transgender children, to see what emotions they go through, anger, resentment, maybe hate, humiliation, whatever that is, and to see why they have these emotions and how it's affecting their child at the same time, these emotions, or how they handle the transition. Because we choose the transition, but then we sometimes, us being of trans experience, don't realize how our transition is also forcing others to transition with us. You know, my mother has to now say she has two sons instead of a son and a daughter, and my grandmother has to now say, oh, it's not Brittany anymore, it's Bryson. And, you know, and they have to explain things that they might not have a solid understanding of. Mm. So it causes for them to have to transition without any control, you know, and they feel some kind of way about that, or they might feel angered, or, and I'm just throwing this out there, they might feel a grief of loss, right? Now their daughter is now son, or, you know, and they're grieving that daughter. So, yeah, it's always, so that's, it's just to bring that lens to the forefront. Like my grandmother once told me, she said, oh, I had a dream that you had died, but when I go in the living room, you're Bryson, but they told me Brittany was gone. And as I interpreted that dream to my grandmother, I said, you know, probably because you haven't let go of Brittany. You probably haven't let go of Brittany. Brittany is gone. Okay. You know,
right.
Bryson's here now, but it's hard to, and I understand right. that it's hard. And know me 30 years as Brittany. You know, I started my transition at 30. And I've always had my feelings of wanting to be male, and remember as young as maybe 5 or 4, you know, praying and wishing I was male, and actually having a dream of it and waking up so depressed because that wasn't my, you know, my dream wasn't my reality. And okay. So, yeah.
So is there, you know, in kind of choosing your dissertation, I kind of would imagine that it's a lot like in choosing a business in a way, because you're wanting to do something that there's not enough of, or something that's never been done before, so that you're creating something new and unique or adding value, right? You know, we're not going to do a PhD dissertation on how to make a donut, right? There's lots of information out there on how to make a donut. So I'm just like giving the simplest example so that people get it. Mm-hmm. And so, and in choosing, obviously there's a personal connection. Mm-hmm. And that in itself, is kind of the driver. But, you know, have you done any, you know, Google searching, Amazon sleuthing, and so forth? Are there any literature, you know, books, or, you know, any kind of resources right now out there for the parent, or is this kind of completely new territory? Is it, or is it kind of an underserved territory where you're looking to add another layer of richness?
Yeah, to add another layer of richness. Absolutely. There's research out there. It's very minimal. Okay. And there's a lot of gaps in the literature. So either the research is limited because only a certain population, like Caucasian parents, and, you know, are mostly the participants. So it leaves a limitation to not be relatable for all general populations, such as Blacks, you know, Latin, and other minority populations of parents to transgender children. Mm-hmm. So in my dissertation, I wanted to be very culturally diverse, and I choose parents who bring that, married parents who aren't married, parents who are of a minority population, because there's a different lens to each. Even though we're all parents of transgender children, you still have your cultural biases or cultural practices that kind of, you know, conflict or come in between, or might seem as a barrier to you acknowledging or accepting your child for who they are.
Right. So, well, I can totally see the validity in that statement.
Yeah.
I mean, just when you even look at, you know, the the African American, you know, gay experience.
Yeah.
And dealing with family, you know, that's why there's such the huge amount of, you know, down low.
Yeah.
And then the Latino, and depending also on some of them on some experiences on where they grew up or how long they've been in, you know, the location that they're at, you know, I mean, very big in Latino culture to have the machismo, married guy with kids, but he has his boyfriends on the side, and so long as he's the top, he doesn't consider himself gay, right? But and yeah. So it's cultural, it's religious, mm-hmm. So very, very interesting, very interesting.
And we know. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so your goals there is, so if you're going to be starting your dissertation in February, how long is that process? Is that like a 3-month, 6-month, a year?
They give you 6 to a year to complete your dissertation. But in all honesty, it depends on the process, whether you're approved immediately in your process as far as your prospectus and all that. You have to get approved each level, so they have to approve your topic of study of what you want to even, you know, do a study on. You got to approve it, and then you have to go to another level and perform your results. And some people get in the middle of their dissertation and realize they're doing the wrong study or they're applying the wrong research method, and they have to start over. So I've heard a lot of different stories, and yeah, so it all depends. But me being proactive, it shouldn't take me, you know, I shouldn't have to go through those certain experiences. I learn from other people's experiences, let's just say that.
Yeah, sure, so. Sure. Well, you know, one thing, you know, just to give a little bit of plug for outbureau.com, if you would like, it can be perhaps a resource for you in your dissertation. And here's how: is that if you would like a free platform where you can have group chats, group conversations, disseminate information to your groups without it being tracked like creepy Facebook, then we don't track all of your, you know, how long you sit on something, or, you know, how long you view, you know, how long you scroll. I mean, they analyze everything. And so for your group members, it's free to join. You can have groups where it's visible on the site, but only members who are part of the group can see the content in the group. There's also the ability to have secret groups. And this might be a way in which maybe you have persons who are okay being on the site, which, by the way, you can actually be on the site and also hide that you're on the site. Make it not public, make it where you don't show up in any results of searching for group members. And then you could be in a group, and it and people have to be invited to that group in order to even know that it exists and be accepted into a group. And so it's not public, and it's not even visible on the website. I and my team would be the only people that know that that group even exists. Okay. So there could be ways to kind of mitigate. You know, I haven't really looked at like Facebook, what their groups are, but you know, perhaps of one, just the creepy overlord constantly watching every click you make might make some parents feel uncomfortable, as far as, you know, sharing their information with you and so forth. In a group, you're also able to do polls. So you'd be able to poll your members of a group, and you can directly contact all your group members at once. So just letting you know that I give you permission to utilize OutBureau as a communication platform if you find that it might suit a portion of your needs or some of your needs. Because it's very interesting, is I know it's part of the rules, is through the course of the 12 and a half years now on LinkedIn with the group there, which groups there suck, let me tell you. I have such little ability, it's unbelievable. through the years, I've had a couple times a year, I'll have someone in a PhD, you know, process, and they'll actually contact me as the group owner and ask permission to post their study to request people to join. Does that make sense?
Yes, so, that's what I did. Mm-hmm.
Apparently, that's a requirement that you just can't post it anywhere. That if you're posting somewhere, you know, in a group on a social media, you have to contact the group owner and ask permission to do that. So at any rate, so you have my permission to utilize outbureau.com and the LinkedIn group. So you don't need to ask in the future if you do, for whatever reason, okie dokie, yeah. But you can point your university professors to this video. See, he gave me permission. See, right here. Because it sounds very interested and very needed, and obviously, and pardon me, you know, I'm is cisgender, is that correct pronunciation? I'm a guy. I've always been a guy. I have never had any feelings. I have never even done drag. Once I wore a dress for Halloween, I was 8 years old. And Dolly Parton was very, very famous back then. My father, every single week, watched his show. And for some reason, I decided to be Dolly Parton for Halloween. I thought it was hilarious. And I had pool towels in a top. I mean, they were balloons. And it was so funny because that year, I was riding in our little VW Bug around the neighborhood, and I didn't shut the door. And so I actually fell out and fell onto my chest. If it weren't for those big towels, I would have eaten pavement.
Oh, geez.
But, you know, I'm just saying that I've never have had any inclination, any desire, any identity toward, again, even as a gay man, like wearing a dress for fun. That's not fun to me. So I don't, you know, to me, it's totally different, right? It's totally different. But I can, you know, I've been learning even as a gay man, you know, because it's not the same for me. Just like I had no idea what it'd feel like to be a heterosexual man. Ew, right? I don't know. I just can't wrap my brain around it. I personally have never been with a woman. I'm what you call a gold star gay. I have, other than I think twice I've kissed a girl, or they actually kissed me when I was young, cute teenager with a without a hair. But one thing, although I know it absolutely does not, you know, equate, it doesn't translate, but I have had something where my parents were devastated. And that's in preparing for when my ex and I were preparing to adopt our son, who's now almost, he's 10 and a half. In April, he'll be 11. We were doing adoption at birth, and I wanted to have one family name. I didn't want to do a hyphenated name, because that's putting our bullshit onto a child before they're even born, right? And because then what if he finds another person to marry in the future and they have a hyphenated name? Then what they do? What do they do, right? They have four last names, really? Just, you know, it's call me Dennis X. I'll go with X. Now, if I could just have some of those superpowers, that would be awesome. If aliens could zap me with, you know, healing powers and flying powers and rays out of my eyes, I would be. But so Velko is my husband, my ex's family name. And we chose that because there's only seven men in the entire world with that last name, and three of them are us. So it's a very small family, and he has one male cousin who finally had a baby. So we were looking at that name basically possibly vanishing. And I liked I'm the only one in the world with my name. And, you know, that was attractive. I liked that. My birth last name was fairly common, and which is now my middle name. And, you know, but boy, see, I knew you don't ask your parents as a man, you don't ask your parents' permission to change your name. And I knew that. So I changed my last name. We weren't legally married, but we were preparing for it. And for me, again, it was just all about preparing for my son. You know, if you're in the midst of going to an emergency room with a toddler, you don't want to say, you know, I don't know. I was just thinking about all the practicalities of it. And again, the rarity. And my ex was fine taking my birth last name. He was completely fine with it. But again, looking at all of it. So at any rate, so then when we went through the whole process of, choosing our son's name, it's also, his first name is very, very rare as well. There's like two or three other boys in the entire world with his first name. So now he's got a truly rare name. So that was the whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. Well, when I finally told my dad, he's still to this day, 14 years later, can't get over it. And so I'm just saying that, you know, I couldn't imagine if I also came out and said, oh, I'm no longer Dennis, I'm Denise, or I'm, you know, Sheila or whatever. Just taking that little experience and how hard that still is for them, I couldn't imagine the difficulties, the personal things that you would have to go through yourself, let alone your own everything, right? And then, as you stated when we first started this conversation, everything in and around the rest of the family, everyone has to, even, you know, your grandparents, your cousins, your aunts, your uncles, everyone kind of has to adapt with you, and they didn't make the choice.
Right.
You did.
Right.
And that, so that that has got to be truly difficult. So I think just based on my very, very small example of trying to pull something from my life to empathize and identify with what you and what everyone of transgender experience must go through, is that would be very tough. Very tough. So I absolutely applaud you, and I think it's wonderful that you're thinking about the others. And
I totally agree. You know, I always feel the concept, I always say, you know, united we truly do stand strong, because divided we fall short. You know, and in our reflections of, you know, my interpretation of the rainbow flag is the fact that we all bring a different color to the table, and within our uniqueness it still pops, right? You still see your red, you still see your yellow, you still see your blue, because that is you. So to want to do everything by yourself and on your own only makes it complicated when you could come together and make a beautiful blend, you know. So I truly believe in, you know, just coming together, building our resources, because we're stronger together. We make more of a statement compared to society, or being raised in a society that divides you all the time, whether they're throwing you under this label, this category, this ethnicity, or whatever. They're constantly dividing you and watering down your authenticity. So you're constantly trying to figure out who you are, or you identify with this group, but you also identify here. And it's just like, just come together, bring all of you to the table, and just let yourself shine. Don't be intimidated by what you can't do that you know somebody else can do. No, you utilize that strength, because that's shared leadership, right?
Well, so interesting. Well, I look forward to seeing your work as you get it done. Mm-hmm. I'm sure after this, you already know that this could, I'm sure, become a book.
Yeah. So that's my goal, is to, you know, publish it, even make it a documentary, you know.
So, well, as that happens, would love to have you back. Oh, and share your findings, and of course then promote your material, your books, promote your groups on our site, and or promote your own website, where people can find you in the future, both now and in the future. And it will be some interesting stuff. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely appreciate you opening your platform to me, hosting me on your platform. So I definitely will be taking you up on your offer. And of course, you can find me at transparentlifeconversations.com.
Transparentlifeconversations.com. We'll have that in the show notes.
Yes. Yes, I do life coaching services for LGBTQ youth. And specializing in transgender youth and families. So,
okay, you'll need to add corporate diversity and inclusion consulting onto that roster.
Yes, I do. Yes. Yes, I do consulting, business consulting, and stuff in another organization. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, super. Well, it has been such a pleasure chatting with you today, and lots of great content. I'm sure a portion of our content will touch many lives.
Yes.
All righty, Bryson. Thank you so much. Again, thank you, everyone, for listening. This is Out Bureau Voices. Be sure to hit that subscribe button down below to make sure that you are notified of future episodes. And to be proactively notified, click that bell. That ensures that notifications get on your desktop or your mobile app. Now, if this has been a little long, or you just would like to perhaps listen to these conversations while walking your dog, lying on the beach, or doing your cardio, or perhaps your commute to work, be sure to check us out on the over 14 podcasting apps such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and about 10 more. Thank you so much. This is Dennis Velko with Out Bureau. That's OUTBURO.com. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.